Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Twamboka Pulakisha broadcasting live from Bonn, Germany. Welcome to Diaspora and Truth. You are listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in again today. I really appreciate it when you take the time to listen to all the exciting shows that I have lined up for you. I'm very excited about today's show. It's not very often that I have African artists on this show, and I'm trying to branch away, you know, from all the different issues, the difficult issues that we talk about, and try and lighten the show a little bit by bringing in beautiful African people that are doing beautiful African things and how they're doing them and how they got to where they were. So today I'm very excited to have the London-based artist and author Samson Kambalu on the show today. Mr. Kambalu, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
I met Mr. Kambalu at the African Youth Foundation award show, the Adler Awards, and he and I both walked away with an award. And I was very, very interested to see, you know, his work and what he had done. So unfortunately, I had to leave the show earlier, but when I got home, I rushed straight to go and see what it is that he has done, you know, what was all the buzz about him. And I was very pleased to find out that he studied at the University of Malawi Fine Art, and also at Nottingham Trent University and the Chelsea College of Art, and that he works in a variety of media, including painting, drawing, site-specific installation, video, performance, and literature. So I thought that I would have him on the show because I have a lot of friends that are artists, and I would like them to hear from you what it is you do, where you're from, how you got to this place that you are. So, Mr. Kambalu, I'd like to, first of all, start with your life in Malawi. You are from Malawi. Malawi is right next door to Zambia. You know, you are our cousins. Can you tell us a little bit about what life was like for you in Malawi?
How do I explain it? Where do I start? It was like...
So you were born there and you went to school there?
Yes. Life in Malawi was like, I grew up in a large family of eight. So it was busy, but it was fun. I think large families, my mother's Catholic and she always wanted a big family. Mm-hmm. And so it was a full house, eight kids. And I remember it being, we had our challenges, but it was so good fun to have, you know, to have all these people around me. And it was very Christian, as you know, or very puritanical in some way because of the government that was there, because of the Christian heritage, but it was also very traditional in many ways. Mm-hmm. All these things came together. But my family, my father was Presbyterian, so... He had a strict side to him, but at night he had this character we called the Jive Talker, and he was Catholic. But if you know, he was a civil servant. My father, he worked as a medical administrator, and my mother was a teacher. And yes, I think their ways of doing things are pretty different from ours. I think that if I run a family, I'll run it differently. Mm-hmm. They were very kind of, strict.
Strict African parents. I think we've all had, you know, everybody that's maybe listening to this show has had African parents that are strict and, you know, pretty religious. How did this affect you going into art? How did you even get into art? Did you study it at school?
Yes. When we in secondary school, not in primary school, I just did the usual circuit of kind of you had an art and craft lesson somewhere that we do all the time. I think that one of the things that we did a lot on the playground was like cartoons. We like to draw from anything, anywhere. We would do like I think that's a usual thing. And when I started doing this, for instance, I know when I realized that I wanted to draw is that we're learning how to read clock faces in an arithmetic class, and my friends were using coins. And I couldn't be bothered to draw the clock face with a coin. I used freehand. And they were impressed with that I could draw an almost, kind of perfect.
A perfect circle, yes, just by freehand.
And I realized that actually they were finding it hard to do this. So then I just moved on to draw other things and liked it. And I drew whenever I could, whether I was in an art class or not. And when I went to secondary school, there was East Otterson International School. Well, kind of it was called the Eton of Africa Comes Academy. It was founded by the then life president, Dr. Banda. He wanted to this school to kind of to be a kind of a leadership school. So you had to get there using a scholarship. You had to get a scholarship to go there because the
very prestigious school. Yes, I've had friends that have also talked about how they tried to get into Kamuzu Academy. So you went there, and is this where you got more acquainted with art?
That's right. Yeah, there I took GCSEs,
mm-hmm.
and so art there was formalized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a proper art teacher, and I did that on to A levels. And then from there, I went to the University of Malawi, and there they had also fine art. And I did fine art and ethnomusicology because I was also interested in music. So I did the double major, ethnomusicology, fine art. I studied painting and drawing and sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
And then, when I finished, they took me on as an associate, staff associate, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And all the professors just ended up dumping all their classes on me.
Okay.
I was supposed to be kind of a lowly staff associate, but I ended up teaching many hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, yes, I moved to Europe. But I don't know, I should let you ask the question.
Okay, so I was going to ask, when you were at, Kamuzu Academy and you were learning art, what kind of art were you taught? Were you mostly taught, Western ideas concerning art, or were you taught about African art?
Western. I did my art education at Kamuzu Academy was very traditional. We did still lifes,
mm-hmm.
and we did landscapes and portraits.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was at the university, I started changing my style to make it like modern, if you like. I moved those looking at Picasso and the like. Picasso, who worked with African sculptures, African masks, and I thought, oh, that's really good. I can change. And then I took some of the new works I had done back to Kamuzu Academy,
mm-hmm.
cubist kind of works, and my teachers were shocked. The teachers were, it was a very traditional school. You did landscapes and portraits and still lifes, and that's it.
So then when you came to, when you came to Europe and you started to do your artwork here,
yeah.
Did you have a sort of art culture shock? But I mean, you had been taught Western art, so when you came here, the art wasn't so shocking. Was it more of a culture shock, and then you had to interpret that into your art?
It wasn't a culture shock. I think that I was 13 years old when I went to Kamuzu Academy, and then you're exposed to books. You start reading at that. My education was intensive, so and my school tried as best as possible to kind of expose us to kind of enlarge our way of looking at the world. Well, it started at home, really. My father had a large bookshelf. We called it the diptych. And he kept art books there. And one of the books I remember me looking at there on this big, huge bookshelf was some works on Van Gogh, you know, so, and all kinds of stuff there, and these things, they just, they were not around us, but you knew there was a world somewhere beyond the immediate surrounding. So somehow, I was always looking for art. So by the time I came to Europe, it wasn't, what shock was there? Maybe they're always shocked, but it's more abstract one, and I have to, I'll find a way of kind of telling you.
Okay.
What really shocked me, but it's not obvious things like that.
So when you first came to Europe, which country did you come to?
I came to Amsterdam. I had a residency at the Tammy Mieré Foundation,
mm-hmm.
and they take African artists there. I think they take about maybe, I don't know, two artists a year or something. They do this residency there. Tammy Mieré was a South African artist who was murdered during apartheid, and a foundation was set in his name in Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
And so I applied to this foundation, I got a place there, and actually that's the way you get into the art world, it's residencies, you know. You have to come to Europe through, preferably, a residency, because then through the residency you get connected to curators, museums, and who are willing to look at what, to look at what you're doing. Because at the time in Mieré Foundation, one of my mentors was Marien Duma, you know, famous South African painter. And so when you're there, you're kind of introduced to other organizations, and then your career can take off from there if you're any good. You still have to kind of show that you've got work that they can...
Well, that is one question that I have. I mean, there are a lot of young African artists that come to Europe that do the kinds of fellowship that you did in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
What is it that makes them successful? What would make them, you know, become a name in the art world, especially as African artists? What would you think that would be?
You have to kind of, art is about working from what you really know,
mm-hmm.
not what you really know, but what moves you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in Malawi, of course, the huge market in Africa is the tourist circuit.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a painter, people want you to paint them elephants, and this is what Europeans like to see when you're in Africa. They want to take back an elephant, a giraffe, and there's a market for that. So inevitably, a lot of artists, because they want to make a living, they end up being stuck in that world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not international. I mean, you're not going to go far painting elephants.
Yeah.
No. I mean, you can't if you know how to. I'm not saying don't paint an elephant, but I'm saying you can't be painting curio art. You can't be making tourist art. And that's not enough. In fine art, I think you have to go beyond that. You have to kind of bring in your own way of looking at the world, even if you paint an elephant, as long as it has an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to find that attitude. And I was aware of this, and I've always... The thing I don't like doing is following crowds.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only secret I have as an artist, is that I like to do my own thing, even if I'm the only one in the room doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you raise a valid point about a lot of African artists being stuck in the curios. African art is always seen as landscape, you know, the acacia tree, the grass, the big five in it, and then, you know, wood carvings, etc. And from my experience with the artists that I know, you know, in Zambia, there is more to that. And like you said, people are stuck on doing those kinds of things because they want to make money from it.
Yeah.
Do you think that there is a good future for African art in Africa that has nothing to do with curios and pictures of, you know, the African landscape? Because I know that there's a lot of young African artists that are trying to make different work, but it seems Africans as a whole, you're not appreciating, you know, African art as something else other than the landscape painting. So do you think that we can get to a point where we can appreciate, you know, an African artist that has made something that has nothing to do with landscape or curios?
Yeah, I think that art in Africa, in the everyday life, is very sophisticated. Africans make sophisticated art even now, but it's not what you recognize as art. Mm-hmm. We are Africans are very creative. You know there are limitations. I don't know what's right in Zambia, but I know certainly in Malawi we had to make our own toys, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, you kind of have to be kind of inventive to be in Africa. There's nothing that's handed to you.
Mm-hmm.
For toys, you have to make your own toys. If you want to make a poster, you make your own poster. And stuff like this is the environment I grew up in. And this is where the real art in Africa feel is. It's in the everyday life. Mm-hmm. You have to look carefully in the everyday life, not the tourist market, but the African everyday life. And if you're an artist, if you develop an eye, you can start picking those elements and presenting them as fine art. And then the world looks. In the long run, if you refrain from the tourist market, it pays off in the end. But an artist has to kind of, they say that you have to lose sight of land if you want to get anywhere, across the ocean to the other side. You have to be prepared not to be understood. Mm-hmm. And of course, you have to be strategic. But recently, the Tate Modern bought a work by Meshack Garba, who is the subject of my PhD, Meshack Garba's Museum of Contemporary African Art, which is a large work with 12 rooms that took him about 5 years to put together. And in it, actually, he employs elements of everyday life from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a powerful work, and it's perhaps the largest work that by a single artist that the Tate has ever bought, Western or African. And so the doors are opening for African artists.
Mm-hmm.
If the Tate are able to look at African art beyond the elephant,
mm-hmm.
then surely the world is looking at Africa beyond the elephant.
Right. And now that we talk about, you know, these landscape painting and the curios, one sad thing that has been happening as well, you know, with the influx of Chinese companies in Africa,
yeah.
A lot of these people are able to take all these designs of the curios, go back to China and make, you know, plastic elephants and such, and then come back and sell them to us Africans as home decor. You know, this is one thing that I think, no, this is crazy. This should not be happening, because we think that is the only thing that African art is. How would you encourage schools to be a little more adventurous with art? Because you've talked about when you were in primary school, you know, you had the, you know, art classes, and you, or in secondary school, you had the art classes where you just go ahead and you draw, you know, different things. How would you encourage schools to get involved?
I think that, unfortunately, there isn't a lot of African art education, if you like. There are a lot of art that I spent time doing is what we call Western art. It's based on representation. So, and although Africans spend time painting canvases, it's not what I would understand necessarily as African art, if mm-hmm. you like, because African art is I think more than about representation. I think the question of representation is very much a Western thing. So contemporary art for me, conceptual art installation, is what's closest to African art. Because stuff I do, like performance, installation, they are beyond representation. They look at other things. They look at attitudes, you know,
mm-hmm.
your social engagement, politics, stuff like that. And I feel this is the place for African art. And unfortunately, the irony is that for somebody to do African art, they come to London, have to come to London.
Right.
Because that's when you are allowed to use performance, to use unconventional ways of communicating beyond the canvas, for instance. Where we're in Africa, it's very difficult to be an artist. And this, so this is the irony, that in order to become an African artist, because African art comes from things that we are rich in, performance,
yeah.
These elaborate rituals
that are our own,
you know, that are being adopted in hip-hop, in jazz, in...
Mm-hmm. Right. And then would you say that it is our fault, that we are the ones that think, and that it is that we have to come to Europe or go to the U.S. in order to become an African artist?
Absolutely.
You have to leave your own country. It's our fault, is it not?
It is, because it's a question of education. And unfortunately, we Africans haven't developed an education that makes the most of our heritage, that allows us to be strategic,
mm-hmm.
selling ourselves. it's funny that while Western artists are abandoning, let's say, painting or representation for more sophisticated ways of making art, we Africans are abandoning those sophisticated ways to embrace painting.
Right, yeah. So we are swapping everything. We're sort of following them behind when they are looking more for innovation and we just want to copy what the new thing is. Is that right?
Yeah, it reminds me of one of these films. I don't know which. Well, that was The Gods Must Be Crazy. But there's a scene where, well, it's a thing that these explorers used to do. They would go into Africa with a plastic ball and exchange it with an elaborate kind of calabash that's well made, or a golden goblet.
Right. Yeah.
They'd give you a plastic ball and take your golden goblet or something like that. I think this happens all the time now in Africa, where we are taking their plastic while they are taking.
Yeah, they're taking what's valuable to us and we're giving it away for plastic. That is a great metaphorical way of putting it.
That's right. It happens all the time. It's not only in art, in many for instance, in philosophy, it's the same. Continental philosophy has attempted to move beyond some, you know, if you like, classical philosophy, or he's attempting to move beyond, let's say, Platonic universe, if you like, to a more kind of dynamic universe. And this dynamic universe has already been dramatized in Africa, in traditional philosophies, in the way we relate to our environment. And while we are abandoning this.
Right. That is a good question.
We are, do you understand? Even in philosophy, it's changing. Well, philosophy in the West is getting more sophisticated as it's getting more simplistic in Africa. Sorry.
Well, one of the things that, you know, most people will talk about is that art is not that important because we have so many issues going on politically. Who has time to sit around and make art? You know, I like the point that you've brought up, that when we are younger, when we were younger, you know, growing up in Africa, you do not have so much of an access to, you don't have a Toys R Us around the corner to go ahead and buy your toys. You sit there and you make your wire cars and your football out of plastics and all this stuff. That is a part of being artistic. And usually we brush that off and say, well, that's just what we do. It is in us. It is innate in us. Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, absolutely. At the moment in contemporary art is about life, art and everyday. And this is what African art has been for hundreds of years. I think that the initiation ceremonies are in a form of art. The masks, like, I mean, inspired a lot by the Gule Wankulu tradition, the Nyao tradition in Malawi, of mask making, of masquerade. And the idea of play in Nyao has influenced my take on art a lot. I tend to employ a lot of play transgression in my art, and this comes from a reinterpretation of this Nyao tradition, and it's not about, oh, how can I paint this landscape? How can I? It's about questioning received ideas. It's about negotiating your place in society. It's about preserving your freedoms. You know, these are the things that are being explored in contemporary art, and they exist organically in the African setting. The only thing that's left is for Africans to be aware, to be conscious of these things, that art is everywhere. Art, and to be strategic, to take these ideas and reinterpret them. But for instance, now I can't wear a Nyao mask. I'm not going to wear a mask anymore. I think that time, I wouldn't want to, because that world is being reduced to tourism now.
Right.
So what I have to do is to just scrutinize Nyao, reinterpret its philosophy in order to fit the times. Because if I don't, then I'll be reduced to that tourist circuit in Africa. So the Nyao mask, for instance, has to be reinterpreted. And for me, I feel that contemporary art is a place where you can interpret many traditions that are being lost in Africa. They can be brought there. I don't know how representation art can accommodate this aspect of African art. So yes, the education is, we need a sound education regarding art in Africa, instead of just adopting
So how are you contributing back to Malawi, you know, the art scene in Malawi? Are you doing anything with any artists in Malawi? Do you go back to Malawi and have any exhibits?
No, I did. I haven't been to Malawi a while. Mm-hmm. But I think that, believe you me, for artists, for me, I always say when I'm in London, I speak more for Malawi. You know, we can't do everything. There's a point, I think there's... there's a point when I would want to be more in Malawi, work more in Malawi, but I had to kind of establish myself on the international scene to speak more for Malawi. Because if you're in Malawi, sometimes you can just be isolated and just say that you have to go to Rome.
Right. So this just ties in with the fact that a lot of your kind of art is not appreciated in Malawi. It's not appreciated as it is on the international scene.
Mm-hmm. I think it's an unfortunate. It's a form of, for me, it's a form of. People shouldn't think that actually this Africans should be uncensored for not understanding the likes of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's, for me, it's not necessarily something to be proud of, because actually, it's the analogy I've told you. You're looking at a plastic. You know, a lot of things that Africans are appreciating now. I don't know how empowering they can be, because we are now just interested in maybe material things, and there's a lot of Christianity in Africa. We think that all the answers are in Jesus, and
mm-hmm.
For me, it's unfortunate. I know there are many conservative Africans who, well, how can you say that about Jesus? How can you do this about Christianity? How can? But you have to wake up. There's a game going on. You know, there's a game. The world is not an you have to play the game. You have to see that there's a game going on. Unfortunately, I don't think this.
Well, I'm glad that you bring up the talk about everybody thinking that their answer is in Jesus, etc. Because then this will tie in about you telling me about, you know, your holy ball art installation, which I thought, and that was the thing that caught my attention when they actually showed your profile at the award show, was I had never heard about it. And it was especially the catchphrase exercise and exercise. This really caught my attention. I was like, wow, that's a very clever way to bring it across. So could you just tell our listeners what it is about? What is your work? It's called Holy Bowl. What is that about?
Yeah, basically, it's a football plastered with pages of the Bible, but you have to look at it. It's only the Bible page, because it's soft, that when you apply PVA glue, water-based glue, if you like, around the football, it just nicely covers it, and it looks aesthetically pleasing. And I made this ball as a work of art in 2000, when I was in the studio one day, bored. I was a painter then. I still do paint, by the way. I shouldn't. Artist draws. I draw a lot, even now, today. I'm just, you know, I shouldn't sympathize with things. But so one day there was my Bible there, and there was a football on the floor. And somehow I just thought I would put these Bible pages around the football. And from then on, I felt like I could begin to address things that really mattered to me beyond just painting for people to hang in their houses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The art I did at that time was more when people walked into my studio, oh, I like the color, you know. So, but, and all along there were many issues that were happening. And, you know, I grew up in Malawi after, in Malawi around 2000. And there was a lot of things going on there, bad things, you know, the things like AIDS epidemic, for instance. We had lost so many abilities. And you're looking around, there's a kind of nausea, kind of things losing meaning, you know. An existential thing going on in the air. And I think for me, with the Holy Boy, I began to kind of try to make something out of it. In Europe, for instance, the Black Death, if you like.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Helped to produce all this kind of great literature, great art. And I don't know how things like, let's say, the AIDS epidemic in Africa has helped shape
Shaker Arts and everything. I mean, I would say that from my own experience, I have found some artists in Zambia that have used the AIDS epidemic to make a great work of art. There's this really huge statue that a friend of mine helped make, you know, out of different kinds of materials. And it is inspiring some people. But I agree with you that, you know, this is something that as Africans we can draw from and learn. If the Black Death can spurn on a great movement in literature and art in Europe back then, we can do the same with HIV/AIDS. And when I'm not saying that we should do it the way the Europeans did it, but no. Like you have said, to interpret it in our own way. So with this holy ball, what are the issues that you were trying to address? I mean, you talked about in 2000 you were in Malawi and then you saw all these things happening. So from wrapping a football in pages of the Bible, what issues are you trying to address with that?
So I think that the questions are about meaning. How do you, I just, oh, I know so many dead people around me, and do I just go to church? And this is what Africans do, you know. Mm-hmm. We just flock to Pentecostalism, kind of, okay, we don't want to look at what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, I wanted to tackle the issue philosophically.
Mm-hmm.
So the Holy Book for me is a kind of departing point. What is it? Play has always been central to my work, and play begins to me began then to be a way of coping with things, negotiating things. You'll be shocked. A simple thing that you can apply play to everything, and you can find your way in the world. You can. So for me, from the Holy Ball, I can play with other ideas as well.
Mm-hmm.
I can question ideas. I can play with them. I can. This is what, for me, the Nyao tradition in my country was all about, the masks. Among the Chewa, it's not just about... Kulonku is actually the great play. It's called the mm-hmm. great dance, great play. And the Chewa used play to cope
mm-hmm.
with the challenges around them. The mask came from actually suffering, I believe, you know. And I think the mask is a kind of an affirmation of a certain, of that despite everything, life must go on.
So then you've talked about the Nyao using the mask as a form of, you know, talking about their, or working with what they're going through. That is how they let it come out. So would you say, with this holy ball and all the ideas that you were playing around with, would you say that Africans are rushing towards religion and not questioning about what is going on around them?
That's right. We like to hide, and this is not what my ancestors, if you like, in the Chewa did. The Chewa, if it is happening, if there was a slave trader in the bush, a mask
mm-hmm.
wearing this, dressed as a slave trader would appear. Mm-hmm. If there was a an explorer, you know, masks, they come in Simon Peter when the missionaries came into Africa.
Mm-hmm.
There was a mask called Maria happened, and Maria is always rude. She's much ruder than Madonna. And when, you know, we've lost all these things, our parents and humor. They didn't just say, oh, Jesus, please help me. They looked at life square in the face and say, okay, I'm going to try to negotiate this. And I think that, that there was a certain kind of loss of meaning with what was happening in Africa towards the end of around 2000, well, growing up. For me, church dogma wasn't enough. Going to church and going through remorses wasn't enough. I think that I had to look at things in a kind of a philosophical way. And as I say, Holy Ball is a revaluation. It's in a way of colonizing my Christian heritage with the African heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Holy Ball is the kind of fetish, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Interesting to hear you talk about that, because as you mentioned before at the beginning of the show, that you came from almost a Puritan background.
Yes.
What would you say to somebody that's saying that you're only going in this direction because you are trying to sort of react from the way that you were brought up, you know, as a form of rebellion to your puritanical upbringing?
I think it's more than that. People think that. A lot of people think, fortunately, the Holy Ball, but this is in the very nature of fetishes, if you like. It can be just a ball to somebody else. or it can be just be an artifact, or it can mean something. So I find that when I exhibit holy balls, both Christians and kind of, let's say, are pleased with the work. But I think this is the meaning of transgression. I think that the holy ball for me is more of a transgression than blasphemy. Blasphemy is kind of one-sided, and that transgression is much more sophisticated. And transgression, you learn this from what a lot of, let's say, the Nyao mask tradition, there's a lot of transgression in happening. Transgression is about looking at things differently, rather than just dismissing. I'm just not dismissing my Christian heritage. As a matter of fact, I'm proud of it. I like the universalism in Christianity, that we, all human beings are one. I like this message a lot. I can have other problems with what's in, but there are some things in Christianity that I'm really proud of, and so it's not just that, but it's a revaluation. Definitely, I think I'm against dogmatism, and the Protestant tradition which I inherited in Malawi was always about questioning, and that's why there's a proliferation of so many churches in Africa, isn't there? There's lots of small churches. When you go to, I'm sure if I go to Lusaka or
yes, there are quite a number of churches. So are you saying that there's, you know, these churches have sprung up this way because we're not willing to ask questions, we're not willing to look around and say what is going on here and how are we contributing to the situation?
That's right. And unfortunately, instead of using this kind of genius for questioning things, we just use it to think of another church because we are afraid of going beyond the Bible.
Right. Like almost like it's not allowed.
No. So when you want to rebel, you just come up with another church. I think Holy Boy is an attempt to move beyond all that to bring other elements, to go beyond dogma, not to be afraid to ask these questions. Does God exist? And if he existed, what should you look like? What is God to our suffering? What is the meaning of our suffering? Surely, should we wait for the year after? Or should we try to find salvation in the here and now? I think that for me, in the Holy Boy, is about, if there is heaven, I'm going to find it in the here and now. And I think that so when I've traveled with the Holy Bowl, I make friends through this work. I open new opportunities, and of course I make other works of art. I write novels, and I make installations. But the Holy Bowl is a kind of a name for me, a kind of object that allows me to say hello.
Right.
Believe you me, it works every time. If I'm stuck, I just take my Holy Bowl and go to the public place. last Christmas, I was in Oslo, and I made lots of friends in Oslo just carrying this bowl. And I was in Moscow. I just went into the marketplace with this bowl, and I made lots of friends. And people can approach it. Unlike if I carry the Bible, I think they'll run away from me.
Right. Yeah, you make a good point there. And I also like that you sort of brought in the fact that you are also a writer. And I would just like to let the listeners know that you can check out more of Samson's work on his website, www.samsonkambalu.com, to see, you know, all his different works and interesting videos that he has. So I would advise you to go check out that page right now as we have this conversation, in case you have any questions for him. Now, I wanted to go into, you know, your writing. Could you tell us a little bit about your book, The Jive Talker?
Yes, The Jive Talker is I think that the thing that I inherited from my parents is critical thinking. My father's very proper, old-fashioned Presbyterian, always asking questions, bearing and no. Of course, you have to be subtle. We grew up under a dictator, so you can see that even the way I question things in my work is, it has to be subtle. You can't be overt. You can't criticize in an open way. This wasn't the way of doing things in Malawi, because you could get in trouble with that under dictatorship. So if you ask questions, you have to be ambiguous. If you watch the Nyao mask, always go back to the Nyao mask. They used to dance before the head of state, and they were always poking fun at him. But it was done in such a way that it was the head of state, who didn't know for sure whether that dancer is poking fun at him or not. And I think a lot of survival in Malawi was about being able to kind of, to have multiple identities, if you like, to play with multiple identities, if you like, to kind of, so what I'm trying to say is that this I guess this was my father's Puritanism, if you like, or conservatism, which was mixed with also criticism, because what he used to do is that during the day he was very normal, he was a civil servant and very kind of strict, but that night, usually over the weekends, he would come in drunk and give us drunken lectures. And in this character, which we call Jive Talker, because he used to call beer jive, right? He would say, oh, you're drinking jive, and he said, let me teach you a bit of jive. Then he would talk about his favorite writers, philosophers. And when he was in this kind of mood, he was very different from the daytime. And in this, he was more transgressive, more outrageous, more questioning of all the very things. In the morning, he would say, go to church. And then he would ask you in the night, why would you want to go to church? God doesn't exist. And then if you try to do the same, he says, I'm not going to church. God doesn't exist. You say, I did say that. That kind of... there was always a room. He transgressed this household, if you like.
Yes. And
doing that bit of transgression, I think we would see a lot of things much more clearly.
Yeah.
And then the following day would go back to normal. And he didn't like to kind of you mix that personality he had as the giant talker with the personality he had during the day as a civil servant. But in between these characters of his, you would learn a lot. And then one of them was critical thinking, and one of the favorite philosophers that I find that he used to talk about was like Nietzsche, continental philosophy. And so when you read these things on your bookshelf, along with the Bible, things kind of you begin to want to know how is this contradiction possible.
Right.
But as I say, so the Jive Talker narrates my relationship with, I think it's about growing up under this eccentric father, if you like. He wasn't eccentric. I think he knew what he was doing. It was a deliberate kind of...
Right.
And he told you to stay late and question everything. You shouldn't. And in my book, you can see how I'm kind of growing up and looking and trying to look at the world differently.
Okay, so I would just like to let our listeners know that if you're listening and you're calling us by phone, you can please go ahead and press 1 if you have any questions for Samson. And if you are listening on, you are using Skype on the webpage, there is a Skype icon. You can go ahead and press that Skype icon to connect you to the studio, and you can have your question or your comment for Mr. Kambalo. We have one question coming in from area code 314, last number is 4644. Good afternoon, and go ahead with your comment or question for Mr. Kambalo.
Yeah, I was really enjoying the conversation. And
thank
I really
you.
Enjoy his way of not directly getting to the point, but leading to the point. And that ball is very clever.
Mm-hmm.
It could have even been an egg when you talk about Africa is being the birthplace of everything. But I was going to ask Mr. Samson two things. One, his name, Samson. You know, one of the things I think, and you're talking about the world, Africans are at a point, black Africans are at a point of paralyzed. They're paralyzed in their steps and won't go any further. It's like coming up to a wall and afraid to look around the wall and see the truth for what it is.
Okay.
Your name is Samson. My name is Pianki. Do you see the differences there on this very subject that you talk about? If your name, first name wasn't Samson, what would it be?
Oh, actually, it is. My name is Kondwani. Yeah? I think you can read about it's Kondwani. And it's called Be Happy. don't worry, you're going to be happy. Or either, like, yes. And but I changed it at around the age of 13. I took my Christian name. I was, when I started primary school, I was still registered with my African name, Kunduani, but I changed it. I wanted something more, well, I don't know. It's a long story why I chose Samson.
I understand why you use that name. One other thing I was going to say is that my grandson is an A student except for one class, and that's theology. And he can't get an A there because he says, Papa, the things that they ask me contradict what I know. It's very difficult, this class. Anyway, I'll let it go on with that. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bianchi, for tuning in. So what do you think about that? What he's saying about, you know, us Africans being paralyzed because, like you've mentioned before, you know, we want to be a little more accepted in the world by changing our names to some things that are easier to say. I mean, my name, Twambo, I've had, you know, a hard time explaining it to people over and over in the years. And sometimes when I introduce myself, I say, you know, I'm Twambo, and it is, I always get pardoned. Then I just, and I've also adopted this way of saying, don't worry, you'll get it after a while, you know. So we are paralyzed in the fact that we want to be ourselves, but then again, we are afraid of letting ourselves be ourselves. How is this translating into our art?
Yeah, well, the thing is that you have to start with nothing. I mean, the thing that the role of transgression in African art or in African religion is that transgression allows you to see that there's nothing here, right? Mm-hmm. The first thing that happens when you get initiated, let's say, into the Gluwanku society, I can say this, is that the elders tell you that this is just a mask.
Mm-hmm.
It's all this bush. Sorry, I have to. Sorry, I didn't use this word. I think that anthropologists like to present Africans as kind of oblivious to kind of to that their metaphysics just put together. They talk about ancestors, the masks representing ancestors, but actually, if you get into the secret societies, they tell you that it's just a mask. It's not an ancestor. Nobody knows what happens when you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that the philosopher being conscious of how things work is peculiar, let's say modern or Western, is not true. So in other words, I'm trying to say that Africans shouldn't be afraid to start from zero. If something is not working, transgress it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what our elders would do.
Mm-hmm.
When the masks came out, everything was allowed. There was a time when villages were ruled by taboo, but once the masks were out, it was go for it. No rules today, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when things were reviewed as they really are. Mm-hmm. In other words, that there is nothing, and we all start from nothing. So if you have a name that you're not happy with that your parents gave you in Africa, change it.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel it's an obstacle to you, change it. Okay. You can either pick another African name that you feel is ringing to you, or but if you have to pick a Western name, do it, or a Russian or a Chinese, do it.
Okay, we have a comment coming in from Mr. Charlie in Canada. Mr. Charlie, go ahead with your question or your comment from Mr. Kambalu.
Thank you so much, and very interesting discussion, actually. Mr. Kambala, first I want to agree with you. Our Christian heritage in Africa, in my view, sometimes is like a scapegoat. We want to hide into just about anything. I remember back in Kitwe in Zambia, a brother has no transport to go from place A to B, and we want to lay hands on him to pray for him so he can get transportation. And then you are like, hold on, there's no need to pray here. Who has 15 kwacha to give this guy to go? He said, yeah, go, drive yourself, brother, have a good day. There was no need for us to lay hands on him. You know, that might sound like a joke, but things like that happened. And up to today, things which require practical, you know, hands-on, you know, let's talk about probably a poverty, you know, instead of providing for the brother, answering the question, how are we going to solve this poverty situation? We would rather go in the concert, pray and fast for 1 month. and come back from there, we are seeing
right.
a solution right in our faces, and look the other way, which I thought that was quite interesting. That was just a comment. But go further with the work of art. How can we promote our cultures, our countries, and our communities with the work of art, knowing that our background art is not seen as something which someone should spend time on, especially in our schools or universities. You are seen as a failure when you are concentrating on art. Talk about that.
Yeah, it's true. It's because they have a narrow conception of art. We Africans are aspiring for an education. We shouldn't be complacent. The education that's given to Africa, usually it's for control. Mm-hmm. So Africans should know that there's a game going on. Usually the West will not make it easy for Africa because they are also interested in, they have their own interests.
Right.
If you want freedom, you have to go for it. If you want a better education, you have to look for it. Don't expect to come with aid agencies. Aid agencies have their own agenda. They will bring you books that are totally useless. They will promote the kind of art that elevates their own interests. And so if you want to get to the truth, you have to inquire. And usually if you ask for it, they give it to you. If Africans demand a better education, an education that reflect their own experiences that applies to the challenges they face in every day, they will get it. But you have to demand it. If you are just passive, you will just get kind of people, and this is the truth about the world, people are essentially selfish. If you excavate people's intentions, maybe they should be reading Machiavelli. and to understand that essentially most people have self-interest. So although you may think, this person wants to help me, but there's always usually something. I'm not saying, I don't want to be cynical, but I'm not saying all people don't mean it. But you have to know that there's a game going on of survival. So in other words, If Africans knew that art, knew how sophisticated art was, they would, I think, promote it. But now, because the education they have on art is narrow, they think, oh, we're not promoting people just painting here animals. But if they knew the meaning of art, it's at the very center of the way we look at the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would kind of reinterpret art in such a way that it was relevant to them, and then they would see the need to. But yes, if you don't, if your conception of art is narrow, you think it's a waste of time. But if you really know what art is, what it means, the way it's given to us from Hollywood, the way it's brought to us in Vogue, people always think of art as painting, but you can see how the West uses art to put forward its agenda.
Mm-hmm.
To control image making, to control what's put online, on the internet, what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
This is how sometimes devastating art can be. Art can be a weapon of control. So what I'm trying to say is that we have to start thinking beyond the narrow conception of what art is to become self-conscious of what we have in our own heritage as art. And then if we do that, you realize that actually perhaps you don't need to go to a gallery
mm-hmm.
to art. I myself, the other thing I can tell you is that as an artist, I've made my own audience. Hmm?
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the earliest teachers I had in my career, I was speaking to, the nice woman I met in Holland, and we were talking about he said, people are saying, oh, but how do I make a living from this? How do I you have to make your own audience, you have to make your own hype. I mean, you can learn from hip-hop stars in America. The hip-hop guy has what's called the hype man, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the same with an artist, when you're setting out, you shouldn't be thinking, who will show my work? You should also be thinking, how can I make my own audience? for me, writing novels is one way of creating my own audience. Mm-hmm. For me, walking around with the Holy Ball is one way of making my own audience.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I have to wait for a Western curator or to promote me, they may not. And they may not promote me in a way that I want. Because not many Western experts are aware of African philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
They interpret African art, African ways of looking at the world in a Western way or in a classical way with disastrous effect. There isn't a lot of expertise on how African art should be read or presented. It's growing now,
mm-hmm.
now, you know. But you shouldn't always think that, Oxford will understand how Africans are, or Cambridge will understand what matters to Africans. Actually, most of the time, they don't know what matters to Africans.
Right.
It's up to Africans themselves to
come up and do something about it.
That's right. I present it to them. And believe you me, if you mean it, if you are determined, you can get support, even in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you have to demand it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
So there's a question coming from Clarence Albert. He is here in Germany in Leipzig. And his question is, are you working with any other African artists, you know, artists in Zimbabwe and Zambia? And how can he get involved, you know, in things that you have done? So basically, he is here doing the sort of fellowship that you have done before when you first came, you know, here when you came to Amsterdam. So uh-huh. are you doing any work with any African artists? And how would you advise an artist like Clarence Albert to get his work out there while he is still here? How can you make the most of this opportunity?
Yeah, when you're an artist, you have to make 50% art and the rest, spend the rest of your 50%, the 50% of your time on strategy. It's not enough, especially in contemporary art, it's not enough to be an artist. As a matter of fact, I could say maybe a contemporary artist is more a strategist. Because once you have an idea, you can get others to make it for you. You can get others to paint for you. People like Damien Hirst, Jeff Koons, they have assistants who paint for them once they have come up with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, oh, okay, I want this kind of painting, and you can hire somebody to paint it for you. So in other words, in order to this is not strange, by the way. A lot of famous artists in history all had assistants. Like sometimes Raphael didn't paint some of his pictures. They were painted by assistants.
Mm-hmm.
So these things happen. The idea that the artist has to personally make all the work is a kind of recent concept from the 19th century. I think it came with Romanticism. Artists, so what I'm trying to say is that he has to develop the work in the studio, but he also has to think of the best way to present it. How do I introduce myself to the people? You have to, I don't know, I would have to look at his art and maybe advise him on how to develop a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to you have to work on strategy. That's in other words, how do you approach museums? How do you approach galleries? How do you, for instance, if the curator is coming to your studio, how do you get her interested?
Yeah.
How do you differentiate your practice from others? What makes you different? What makes you
what are you going to do to make you more eye-catching, basically?
That's right, yes. You spend time developing art, but also strategy. Yes, yes.
Okay.
I think artists ignore strategy. They think I'll just be discovered and suddenly I'm world famous. But
okay. Strategy. I would just like to go to the last question that we have. We're wrapping up our show. We have one more question or comment from area code 612, last numbers 5190. Please go ahead quickly with your question or comment for Mr. Kambalo.
Hey, Mr. Kambalo, this is Titus Natala, Minnesota. I just had the question, I'm coming in late, but on this technology, the latest technology, what can I advise? I think I've heard of where the artist can draw wherever they are, and you can have a print the other side as they're doing it. Do you know anything about that? Can you comment on that?
Oh, that you can print it on the other side.
Yeah, it's like the artist can be writing whatever you are, and then it can come out anywhere where you want. I think there's something going like that. It's a recent technology anyway.
Well, there are all kinds of technologies. Technologies are allowed, and it's, at the moment, I'll tell you something. It's not the medium that matters. I work on across a range of media, like video, literatures, you know. Because what matters now, you have to have a clear idea, a certain attitude, a certain philosophy that you want to communicate with the world. And once you develop that idea, you can communicate it through diverse media.
Mm-hmm.
From the internet to video to literature but you have to develop a certain philosophy. What African artists, I would advise them is to look at where they are coming from and trying to reinterpret what they left behind in Africa. For instance, for me, my tribe has a strong masking tradition, the Nyao tradition, and I've studied this. Not only the masks, but the philosophies around these masks, and I've tried to reinterpret that philosophy for contemporary times. I wouldn't advise them just to kind of lift a mask from Africa and bring it here. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of readjust it. You have to look at aspects of African initiation, African this, African performance, mm-hmm. and trying to reinterpret it for modern times, not just kind of shift those things to here. Then you just be a tourist curiosity. You just be mm-hmm. kind of those... You'll be the other art.
Mm-hmm.
I think contemporary art is about speaking with the world. It's trying to kind of modernize and try to join the game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yes, a lot of reinterpretation is needed. And once that reinterpretation has been done, you can translate it across any medium.
Yeah. So Mr. Kambala, I'd like to say thank you so much. We've come to the end of our show. I wanted to say thank you so much for coming on the show and letting us know a little bit more about African art and sort of where we stand at the moment. I would just like to let our listeners know that you can find more information about Samson on his website, www.samsonkambala.com. Also, if you're interested in reading any of his books, please go ahead and search for his name on Amazon. They are available. If you are on Twitter and would like to connect with him there, his Twitter handle is @Kambalu_S. If you have any questions or would like to connect with him in any way, I think he would appreciate it. I would appreciate it as well. I like to connect people that are doing great things. So thank you so much, Mr. Kambalu, for being on the show.
Yes, thanks, Twambo. You should keep that name. Don't change it.
No, I've had that forever, and I will keep it. I don't care. People cannot pronounce it. It is my name. I love it. Thank you so much for being on the show. And next on the show, we have Mr. Chalia, and he's going to be talking about the PF government claims the constitution has been leaked to the public. What now? Is this a good excuse? And is it just a good excuse not to do the right thing? President Sata also opens an official Facebook page. How can Zambians positively engage the head of state? These and many more stories on this week's open forum page on ZPTR. Thank you so much, everybody that listened to Diaspora and Truth. I will be back next week with, I hope, another thought-provoking program. Thank you so much. Please stay in touch with us on Facebook. I appreciate it. Thank you. My God, you blow my mind and you're killing me slowly with the things you say. You got me confused and I can't explain what I feel for you, but I know what I'm feeling. Girl, I'm falling in love with you. Hold me tight, don't go nowhere. I'm getting the feeling that I'm falling in love.
Good morning and welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio. It is about 8:07 here in Okotok, 10 a.m. Eastern in New York City, and about 5 o'clock in Zambia, wherever you're listening from. This is Zambia Block Talk Radio. Thank you again, Twambo, for your always interesting discussion you bring to the floor every Saturday. And Mr. Kambala, he has a very interesting way of thinking. If you live in a dictatorship, you learn to say things in a very subtle way. You never say it in a direct way. Thank God we have Zambia where we can speak we can say things in the direct way, the way we like it. This morning, I welcome you to Zanda Block Talk Radio Open Forum yet again. A lot of stories which are coming from Zambia. A lot of my colleagues are going to be looking at some of them. And let me just look into the Zambian weekly. I thought it was interesting. The former defense minister resigned. And what the Zanda Wiki is reporting, he had 21 companies who had contracts with the Ministry of Defense, where he was a minister. Some of us may not really like what the president is doing right now, and may be sympathetic to this man, Mr. GBM, but this is what is wrong with our situation back home. I thought that was 21 companies. It's too many companies for one individual, I think, to be. Deputy Justice Minister, Ms. Florence Mumba, has resigned and refused to extend her contract. With whatever is going on with the Supreme Court in our country, I thought that was also very interesting. I wouldn't say I know her personally, as if she knows me. That would be a nice claim to make anyway. But I went to school with one of her nephews in Kitwe. So I knew Justice a little bit. I met her at one of the funerals in Zambia. A couple has been arrested in Mukushi on charges of incest. A sister and a brother have, I think they are married, and they have about two kids together. They are living in Mukushi. They have been arrested by the police. This question I just want to ask is, some of these things, do these people need help? Do we really need to arrest them, put them in jail? I think we should do better than that. Those who have power and come through, these are some of the people who may not really need to go in jail, but they may require our help in cussing. Zambia makes top 10 poorest. There is a pool in Victoria Falls, which is called, I don't know if it's the Devil's Pool in Victoria. It is one of the 10th, which has been described. Let me read it here. The Devil's Pool at Livingston has been named as one of the 10 most amazing natural swimming pools in the world. So that is in Zambia. I thought that is interesting. Those who are listening, next time you visit Zambia, by the way, someone died there just, I think, last month, plunged into the Victoria Falls and died. But I thought it was interesting. One of our own things, art, as this man was saying, we have to create our own audience. I think these are some of the things. As you are listening, you are in Australia, you are here in Canada, wherever. Talk to your workmates about some of these things. We have this amazing waterfalls, and it has this Devil's Pool. Grow interest, you know. If we can take 10 visitors through our radio in our own small way, let it be so. That is another story, latest stories. If you want to revisit those as we discuss what is happening in Zambia, I'll be happy, I think, to go back to that. But there's interesting debate still going on. I thought this week I was going to go to something else, but I can't. And we are looking at the Constitution of the Republic of Zambia. Like we said last week, we live in a very peaceful and amazing country called Zambia. But this may not be so for so long if we Zambians do not stand up to what makes a country tick. And so to say, messing with the Constitution, stuff like messing with the Constitution, these are things which have destroyed a lot of countries in Africa and can easily destroy our country. And I urge all our listeners. We have a lot of listeners who listen to Zambia Block Talk Radio every weekend, every Saturday. Take to Twitter, take to Facebook, say something about this. Don't say you don't like politics. These are things which have destroyed a lot of countries in Zambia. The PF government, in my view, want to hijack the process. They want to abrogate their promise to the Zambian people to have a constitution. There are a lot of things which are a disadvantage to the current president, and we think that's why they are doing what they are doing. So the question this morning, they are claiming that the constitution has been leaked to the public. But we held a lot of guests on Zambia Block Talk Radio who said the constitution will be released in the first place. At the same time, there was no I don't know if it's in window or thinking that this should be a secret. But now it's a secret. It has been leaked, they are being told. It has been leaked, and now there are going to be investigations. But this morning we ask, what is the motive of the PF to begin to behave this way? What are they leading to? And Zambians, let's open our eyes, let's open our ears, and watch them, and remind them that this is what you are trying to do. We are not going to allow it as Zambians. I'm already getting hot. That is my friend. I know you work late hours, and you could probably be getting tired already. So before I let you go, I let you loose, or you forget everything, and have you been following the constitution debate in Zambia?
Yes, I've been following every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. It's interesting. I wonder what is there to find out with the investigative thing. In the first place, is it the right thing? And then secondly, I think there was a refusal that there was nothing like that. So I don't know where they stand anyway. If they're going to investigate, then I don't know what is wrong about it anyway.
Yeah,
I think there was a report somewhere that the president has never even seen the draft of the constitution. But why set up an investigative thing? And that thing is leaked from State House. How can it be leaked from State House if he has not seen it?
Yes. And you know, the interesting thing about what you just said, Titus, is that the information minister just said the other day that a cabinet is studying, and we have a copy of that, the cabinet is studying the constitution, and at the right time, they will discuss with the public when they have discussed it in the cabinet. So the question is, what has changed? What has changed? How now they want to say, okay, it is lost. We never saw it. It is lost. We never saw this document. Ms. Lucas in Kansas City. How cold is Kansas City this morning? Okay. I bet Texas is not cold. It is one of those few days, Ms. Clotilde, that you are not working at the weekend. How are you?
I'm under the weather today.
You are under the weather?
Yeah.
You have a flu, my sister?
I do.
Well, the flu here in Canada has been killing people. Yeah, I'm telling you, it has been killing people. It has been brutal over here. I hope it is not that bad on your side.
No, it's not that very bad one. I think it's just a cold. Because if it was flu, I'd probably be dead by now.
No, don't. Any stories you are following, ladies? Sometimes I've the Erica here. Ladies, they run away with politics, but some of us we live by politics. Any stories, Scotty, that you are following in Zambia?
I'm so interested in knowing exactly what's going on with teaching of the Zambian language. Is it for all the classes, or is it a specific Zambian class?
Okay. So join that. I think Ms. Lucas is having that discussion at 11 Eastern.
Okay.
We should be having that discussion. Follow it. But stay with us so you know what is happening in Zambia, because I think what we are going to be doing is debunking whatever I think government is doing in Zambia. The constitution, as we said last week again, has the potential of putting a country in a very, very precarious situation. And we don't want that to this young, loving loving nation. Thank you. Nathan, good morning. I hope you are home already.
Hey, good morning, my friend.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing I'm going to tell you is the temperature. You know that.
Well, say whatever you have to say, because here it's 12 degrees, and anything above zero here, we are dancing. So there is nothing that anyone is going to tell me. I'm almost about to go to the beach.
Yeah, because I was laughing at somebody. I can't remember where they were saying it's warm today, it's 5 degrees. I laughed. 5 degrees is warm, eh? Clotilde and I, for 5 degrees, we won't go anywhere out of the house. interesting issues, my friend, that you are bringing up. Here's the thing, Roger. First of all, I am very skeptical about that, the draft copy that has been released by Zambian Watchdog. I'm not buying it.
Uh-huh.
I just want everybody to know that I'm not in that group of people who think that document, I'm not buying it, Roger. I mean, that's my position. I don't know where it's coming from, and I do not think that the technical committee are that caliber of people who can release a document to anybody other than to whom it is intended, so to say. I'm not buying that document. And then...
Okay, so what you say, you are not buying it, be more... what do you mean? What do you mean you're not buying it?
I don't think it's the actual document that the technical committee is supposed to give to the president, or which is supposed to be released. The genuine, authentic copy. That's my position. I am not...
Yes, okay.
Yeah, what I believe
and
is
therefore,
that...
If it's not a genuine, authentic copy, why do you think government is interested to know, to start investigating who has leaked it?
Oh, well, they're just reacting. Since the curriculum of being Bemba, I'll say it in Bemba, so they're just responding or reacting to a situation which they don't know what they're doing. They are simply, it's a reflection of what type of leadership that we have. If something is not genuine, they shouldn't have even reacted. Anyway, that's my position.
Okay. I'm coming with the assumption that it's a true copy which has been leaked. That's the assumption I want, to bring on the table this morning, that it is probably a true copy. My own assumption, Nathan, if you want to hear it, in my view, they were given that document and they have leaked it, and they don't want they want this to be an excuse not to bring it to the public. Oh, there is this problem of leak, and therefore we cannot continue. And
actually, that theory, Roger, I would believe and buy that theory myself. I would believe that. Rather than them to say who has leaked the document. Yeah. No, they shouldn't play that game. We are not stupid.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So if it has been leaked, I guess the question I'm asking is, so what? The document should stay intact and be produced to the Zambian people. Let me say hello to Yareka before she goes, because she gets drowsy very, very quickly with politics. So if you don't say hello to her 15 minutes into time, she'll be gone. Ms. Yareka,
good morning. You sound like you're covered in 15 blankets over there.
Where?
In Canada. It sounds like you're freezing.
No,
that's how you sound.
12 degrees. It's 12 degrees. I'm moving with a T-shirt outside. 12 is like or somewhere there, Fahrenheit. I'm moving with a T-shirt. But there is snow everywhere. I told my wife yesterday, I want to go and play golf. But where are you going to find the golf course? I said, I don't know. But it will be warm. I need to be outside. I can't be inside. And then we have an unfortunate situation in California, weather-wise, Mr. Mikareka. Drought is killing you people over there. What's going on?
I don't know which area that is. I haven't even been following the news since I got back.
Okay.
But not here. Not
okay.
here.
So, BBC,
should be somewhere in there.
And, BBC and the MSNBC were showing even pictures of some areas. They have not seen rain so far for quite a while. And
it's a desert.
Like that.
It's a desert.
Oh.
You know,
okay.
That's where we live. Okay. Yeah. I wanted to say something about Nathan. If NSA can leak highly classified information, I don't see why the watchdog cannot get a copy of the draft constitution. So I'm sure it's a legitimate document. I don't really have too much trust in our system that they wouldn't get a hold of it. So I'm pretty sure it's the actual document.
Okay.
Well, that's a very interesting point. Watchdog has been point on in a lot of things.
Yeah.
Has been point on a lot of things. When the government has tried to do ABCD, Watchdog has been, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are thinking, some of the people within the system who don't like what is happening are really helping out this information to them.
Exactly.
Well, it's true. I'm one of those people who has followed Watchdog very closely. But, you can't just have the whole world believe 101% Roger. Somebody has to be a skeptic, and I am that person. that's just my position.
So you can make the discussion interesting. I like that.
That's one of the things I'm going to talk about with Chikimo. I want him to comment on that issue of that document leaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Eric, I am the skeptic in this situation. I'm not buying it.
Well, unfortunately, when I went to Zambia, I discovered certain people who I didn't even expect to be following Watchdog. They are top supporters of Watchdog. I said, what? They said, yeah. We believe them now. Before we didn't.
Under democracy.
In a democracy, you need things like that. Yeah.
Yes.
I was saying in a democracy, you need a situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that's why we are welcoming Mr. Santa to the 21st century. As he comes to Facebook, in our next discussion, 5 or 10 minutes, we are going to be saying, how positively can we engage the president? He has opened up, the State House has opened up Facebook. How positive can we be? I've already seen people insulting on his head, sending him those messages. Those will not help, in my view. They will not help the situation. How can we respectfully engage him so that he can see things probably the way we... So, we are going to talk about that. Area code 601, that's for numbers 2369. Good morning.
Well, good morning. This is Dr. Chongo.
Yes, brother. Dr. Chongo, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good. You are following, Dr. Chongo, the discussion back home. Already over here, we have a skeptic from Texas saying that document is fake. He doesn't think that's a true thing. We need people like him so the discussion can go on. And there are people like me who think discussion is true. And Yareka, we think the discussion is the leak is true. And for me, Roger, I even think it has been done by the PF so they can derail the process. What say you, Dr. Chongo, there, if you have been following the debate over the Constitution?
my community has been confusing. I find myself, you know, leaning on the fence. But first of all, I join Nathan on skepticism because the document has a lot of spelling errors, if you noticed. When I opened that thing, and so many, I said, how can the commission send such a document with so many errors? I just read a few pages out of it, almost 200 pages. And there were too many spelling errors, you know. So I wondered, I said, can they send such a thing with this? Then as I was thinking about that, and then I saw Chela writes that he is concerned about this wrong thing. First of all, he wrote and says, don't consider this thing. This is fake. The next moment, he is saying, we're going to probe. Then the vice president is also probing. Everyone is probing a false statement, you know. How do you probe something that is false? You announce that don't consider it. I mean, now you are probing it. No, then I come back to, you know, to Nathan's idea that they have nothing to do so now they just have to look for something. And at the same time, I strongly believe, like when I woke up this morning, I said, these people have nothing to do, and they are beaten to the game. They have frustrated the commission because the commission wanted to do it simultaneously, no, to the public and to the president, but they refused. And so, you know, it's like they have beaten us, so let's come up with a fake thing. So it's fake from their side.
Yeah.
So that they can say, let's dwell on the fake thing so that we don't produce anything that the
I
people
like
want.
That.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. Okay. So I think I'm joining your camp. This may be a fake thing. But you are also a little bit part in my camp that this is being done by PF so they can frustrate the process.
I strongly suspect you, sir.
Okay. Our friends at Office of the President, the OP, you are listening this morning. We think this is what you are trying to do. Stop it. Stop it. Please stop it. Tell the President to do the right thing. Brother Piyanki, I don't know if you have been following the debate on the Constitution. You have, I don't know what word to use, but you have laughed at us how our Constitution is so big. It's 212 pages when the U.S. has one page. So, but have you been following the discussion on the, I don't know if you read the Saka Times?
Yes. You know, funny thing, I read African newspapers more than I read my local one. But you know, when I first began having discussions with Zambians, and I think it was one of a very inspiring point in my life, I heard about your constitution being revised, and I was really happy because of the things that was going on in different countries, especially in Western countries, and things that was coming on scene that common, and really, you know, in the past they were not acceptable, and I think that the Zambians and everyone and a lot of other countries seen this, and they began to, you know, make some changes, and I was hoping that things would go for the better. I still think so, but you know, one critical thing though, Roger, in 50 mm-hmm. years from now, Zambia's population, if it maintains its present birth rate, would be around 59 million. I think you're about 14.2 now. And it's those...
In 50 years, project.
Yes, in 50 years, it'd be around 59 million, 60 million people. What you do today is going to affect them tomorrow. And if the problems that you have today in your country is considered to be problems, those problems are going to be multiplied 300% tomorrow. And
I agree with that.
The things have to be put in place in order, whereas... people tomorrow don't have to suffer the way people today are.
I like that. And when we hear, this is where I'm with you, Dr. Chongo, all these contradicting stories coming, even the president the other day, we don't need the Constitution. Zambia has held elections with six six elections with one. So now we don't need it since he's in power. Okay. Let me actually even remind people. You see what he said while he was campaigning. Now he's in power, office of the president. The president says we don't need a new constitution. That's what he's saying now since he's in power. But when he was campaigning, this is what he said.
And what we need as a country, the document which we are fighting for, so-called constitution, it must be a document which will provide protection to an individual. At the moment, we have no protection. If you don't have money, you die.
So the president now has forgotten that this is what he said when he was campaigning. Now he's president. No, we don't need a constitution. But you bring a very valid point, brother Pianki there. We need to begin preparing. For 50 million people, those ladies and gentlemen who are listening, Zambia is at 13 million, but in 50 years, the projection is saying we are going to have about 50 million people. If we don't have something which is, you know, solid on the ground, we may have a lot of confusion in our country. Area code, people, I'm losing a lot of numbers here, Nathan. I don't know. I saw this number.
And, you know, Roger, one other thing real fast.
Yeah, go ahead.
Your medium age is about 17 years old. That's probably going to carry into the future, too. And at some point in time, these young people are going to get... The medium age in your country is about 17 years of age. And this same medium is going to carry into the future. At some point in time, these young people are going to get sick and tired. And then it's going to be it's going to be bloodshed. And what's going to happen, you're going to have a lot of young people being killed, slaughtered in the future, and that's going to stymie your birth rate beyond that.
So I hope we are not being prophets of doom, but this is just a timely this is just a timely advice to our leaders. If we did something today, not in a selfish way, we may be just providing some framework for our children when we are not even there. So we shouldn't even worry about ourselves now. Let us just do the right thing. I like your contribution there. So I don't know. I might end there because I want us to brainstorm on what we can do on the president's Facebook page, which he has started. We want to brainstorm that. Unless someone wants to jump in very very quickly, I want to jump to the next subject. Good morning, Dr. Patrick.
Good morning, good morning.
Yes, 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 yes. How's North Carolina today?
It's not too bad. It's in the 50s, 55, not too bad. I know it's been rough
where
you are, but it's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So many people get worried about where we are here. Please don't worry. We are cold, but we are okay.
Excellent.
Yes.
Come to
we are okay. We just have to drink a lot of vitamin D because from what I understand,
Roger.
You know, yes.
I wanted to ask Dr. Pat, what happened to Ken Newton?
he was Newton by San Francisco.
I take the fifth.
Okay.
Okay. Dr. Patrick, let me start this new question with you. Our president has opened a new page on Facebook. I hope now you are connected to Musaka Times. You are seeing things which are going there. You are refreshing yourself. He has opened a new page. I went to that page. Zambians being Zambians, they are already there. They are slamming him on the constitution. They are trying to hide away our documents. But my question this morning, which I want to ask the Zambian people, those in diaspora, and those back home, how can we constructively
engage the head of state, Dr. Patrick, having this access to him through Facebook?
We already have access, because I am sure positive that President Sata is aware of Zambia Blog Talk Radio and its input. Impact on the country itself as well as the diaspora. So he is aware of that. What need to be done or should be done is to collate the contacts that Zambia Blog Radio has already made and channel them towards President Sata's page, in that we would like to engage President Sata as well as his cabinet, his administration, to come on to Zambia Blog Talk Radio to answer some questions as well as engage in a conversation with the listeners. I think that would be, and if possible, entreat him to engage Zambia Blog Talk Radio on a frequent basis. If not him, his administration. I think that, and we could do that through his page. But that would be important, not only us asking him, but those that listen to Zambia Blog Talk Radio can also ask him to do so.
Thank you for that. Dr. Chongo, I was, you know, some of us are developing, I can speak for myself, distrust, let me use the nice word, the better word, a distrust for our president. But he has opened up this channel. So he wants to engage the Zambian people. You can go there, post what you want to say. And I've already seen some bad things going there. My thinking was that if an individual, I want him to listen to me, and I go there with vogue language, I'm possibly telling him he shouldn't even read what he can just read the first few words, and he should shut it down. He shouldn't even hear what I have to say. So if he has to listen to us, any of you, Dr. Chongo, how should our engagement, continuing with where Dr. Patrick has ended, how should our engagement be using the new media?
I think you and I know very well that it's practically impossible for the president to run a Facebook page or web. He can't handle the flow of the communication that will reach that page. He can't. This is practically impossible. So everything is in the hands of Chela. So if somehow we can we can get to Chela and be in a certain relationship, then we can communicate. It will be Chela who will be reading. The president can speak and read all the thousands that will be flowing, all the mail that will go in there. The communication will just be flowing every minute. He can't handle that. So Chela will be there. He will be shifting the things, and he will determine what can be communicated to the president. And so if we can get to him, then we know we can get to the president. That's what I think.
Okay. Roger, can I come in?
Yes, go ahead.
This is Titus. I want people to be a little bit cautious. I think, on the other hand, you have to also think that the watchdog has been a problem. I think people from Zambia, they can't read the watchdog. You can only read from outside. Maybe Mohango can testify.
No, you can read the watchdog on Facebook. They do read the watchdog.
Okay, through Facebook, not just direct. Things are blocked. What I mean is be careful. It might be a gauge for knowing, especially you who write anti-stuff sometimes. It might be a way to, in order to extract what address and stuff where you are, because if you're friends and you write negatively already, you might write in a different blog and somebody can track it down that way. So it might be a netting also for who writes what, just on a reverse. let's say you write some negative thing about the government through the watchdog, and then you befriend yourself with the Facebook page, there's a way somebody can track that. It's the same you. So you can use a fake name, whatever you're using, but you're coming from the same domain. So there's a way they can track that. I just want to make sure that as much as you're advising people not to be so negative and insulted on the page, be careful, they're probing. One of the other ways is you're already a friend on that Facebook page. It's easy to probe you, what you have written. If you Google your name now, Zambia Blockers Radio comes on because there's some attachment of what you have written and stuff like that.
It's okay. On the question of fear, Titus, if they want to know where I am, I can probably even help them. I can post my address, put it on their Facebook, so they even know where I am. Fear is probably one of the tools dictatorships use. Any nation, but anyway, Nathan, what is your take on this whole issue of Facebook setup?
First of all, a Ghanaian friend of mine, posted something on his page. He said, "What lesson, in a few words or one word, what lesson do you learn from Martin Luther King Jr.?" I put one word: courage. When we are doing this, Titus, you have to be courageous. You have to cast off all fear and everything else. You have to lay, like Dr. Patrick keeps telling us, and you have said many times, we may not even be able to enjoy the fruits of our labor. It could be our children, our grandchildren. Coming to your question, Roger, today, like our brother Samson from Malawi said about Pentecostalism, today I have the anointing of being a skeptic. This page is not by President Sata. It's just somebody doing this thing. It's not. I don't think it. Nah. Have you seen the comment? In fact, a friend of mine has invited me to like the page. I'm sorry, I love you, but I'm not going to like the page.
I'll visit it, but I won't like it. I'll go to it and...
I'll be reading it, but I'm not going to like it. Here's what one colleague of ours says. I don't think you'd mind us mentioning his name. Our counterpart in UK, Crossfire Gesho Munjovu, says it would be good if Mr. George Chela issued a statement confirming the account indeed belongs and is managed by President Michael Sata himself. I want to agree with Gesho. I mean, like Titus has said, and I know a lot of people do that. They use pseudonyms or they create things to do on Facebook. This is not President Sata's page.
Okay. It is a good practical question. I think you bring Nathan, and we are going to send this morning. Thank you for my sister in Boston, Teresa Lungu, who is encouraging and sending us a message here. She says, we are going to stay strong and we are going to point out things which are wrong.
Amen.
Nathan has got a very weird way of thinking this morning. I don't know. Everything to him today is not true. It's all fake. But things are happening. So we challenge again the OP, if you are listening, Office of the President, work with our good friend at the State House, Chela the assistant, to issue a statement. This idea coming from our friend Gesham in the UK, to issue a statement, official statement, that the President has opened a Facebook page, because some of our friends... should I call them doubting Thomases? This guy today is just doubting everything. Doubting that your page is authentic and what you are doing is real. So please issue a statement say this week coming up, issue a statement so we can hear what you have to say, whether this page is true. But we are going to stay on that topic, that the page is true, the president... Esther Lungu, is it Esther Banda of Malawi, has one page. I think another president in Ghana or Kenya has, and they interact with the president.
So this is not new only to Zambia, if that is it is true. Bianchi, what message should we be sending? What should be our post be as we discuss, as we interact with the president? Some of us who think this pledge is true.
Well, I got Sada is an old man. He's tiptoeing through the grave. What possibly can he get out of delaying the process of Zambia's movement forward? Another point, Zambia could take the position of Egypt. They rewrite their constitution every month, seemingly.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I think that I want to see the country move forward. I mean, there's no time. We've waited long enough. It has to move forward. And I can understand. I'm beginning to understand now of some of the things that I've heard, like Cletus used to always complain about the government. But I'm beginning to understand, you know, what the problem is. I understand why Sada issued such a weak welcome to Zambians in the diaspora, seeing that what has evolved out of delay in the Constitution being put forward. And I think that it's good that the Constitution was leaked because, to my understanding, what was written in it is really not what should be in it. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise.
I don't know if we want to go back to the Constitution because that is an interesting what has been written in there, reading through it. And there is a dual citizenship clause, which I think is going to pass through if that draft constitution is allowed. And I was happy to see that. Dr. Patrick, any more thoughts on this?
I'm going to pull Bianchi to the side and smack him around a little. Bianchi's been pretty rough today. Bianchi's my good brother, and as family members, we have to smack each other around from time to time. Bianchi's statement about bloodshed, that made me wince. We never want to have bloodshed in Zambia. There are many ways to achieve what we want outside of bloodshed. About the comment concerning Chela getting to him to reach Sata is a good suggestion. If that's a route to make this happen, open up the dialogue so we can get direct responses from Sata. If we're going to jump on him, let him respond. And if his response is inadequate, then we jump on him some more. But at least there is an opening, a perceived opening, and we should use it. We should use all avenues to engage in political discourse. So let's do that. Now, Titus's comment about us being cautious, yes, that is very true because we don't know the political mind freeze of various people in various administrations and ministries, and they can become retaliatory, and we should be cautious of that. My suggestion is to use the diplomatic opening statement that many of us use when we begin a presentation to the diplomatic community. We always say all protocols observed. Which means we can be straightforward, but we have to be cautious in our discussions. And sometimes we can't be. Sometimes we come right out and say you're wrong and you should be admonished for it. But a lot of times we can be. So we have to make sure we have that balance. With respect to the Constitution in the United States, the Constitution in Zambia, the Constitution in every country is the legacy of the country. And if we can change it for the better, we should do it. And if there are ways and individuals that are trying to submarine the Constitution, then we should, in fact, be a voice to prevent this from happening. So I agree with Pianki with respect to the leak. It is a blessing in disguise, and all leaks should be addressed. Whether it's true or whether it's false, we should address them, and we should not let President Sata back away, if that, in fact, is what he's doing, back away from the Constitution.
That's what I'm saying. But I'll let Pianki defend himself. Pianki, your brother is punching you around for mentioning bloodshed. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Patrick is older than I am, so I have to respectfully. I have elders that I have to, you know, respond to. I have to act accordingly. But no, I don't want to see bloodshed. But I tell you, young people become restless. And that's what you're going to, I think that's what you're going to see in the future. The young people are going to become restless. We're old and we're comfortable. You know, if you take that rocking chair from under us, we would just fall to the ground. But it's a longer fall for a young person, and they really don't want to make it. They want to look forward. They want to be able to experience the things that they can see others around the world experience it. And actually, that is what's working against those who don't want to move forward. Technology today is permitting your young to see things, see their dreams on the horizon, and they want to reach for those dreams.
That's very true. That is very true. But us as elders, we need to provide some guidance from experience. When we were coming up through college, we were classified, even though it's the freshman or the sophomore, junior, senior year, we were always classified as sophomores. And the interpretation or the definition of sophomores is wise fools. And we didn't have that much to protect, because we're young, we're vigorous, and we want to change the world in a minute. So when somebody does something that's wrong, we shout out and we stand out. And that was one of the major movements during the civil rights era, protests coming out of the universities. And if you attack our children, then therefore the parents will support our children. So it starts with the university, the youth in the universities, and then the country will follow in pursuit. So it's very important to recognize that our youth are sophomores. Those are the wise fools, but they are leaders. And we as elders should try to caution them as they move along. You know what our parents always say is, you know, we've been there. We've experienced this, so we know what we're talking about. But youth always want to experience it for their own selves, and hopefully we can just slow that self-experience to a modification to a certain degree.
Okay. I've got an online, I don't know if it's a petition or question here. Someone listening somewhere, they haven't said where they are, but they say on Mr. Sata's page, it's good that we have this as a platform to engage the president personally. This person believes the page is Mr. Sata's on the Constitution. His fear is that the people are too impatient with the process. I don't agree with that. We're just following what was promised to us. It's recorded here on Zambia Block Talk Radio. We can bring the archives. The Constitution will be released simultaneously, given to the public and the president at the same time. So this is not an issue of impatience. This is an issue of holding the man to his word. I think that's my thinking. A good sister of ours, she's doing amazing things in Zambia, taking books and doing
built, actually reconstructed a library in Russia. Torment of an Angel is a new book she has released. So if you can Google that book, it's not very expensive, actually. It's a very affordable price. Torment of an Angel is a story of survival in a contemporary Zambia, a nation that is westernized, I like that, a nation that is westernized, yet still underdeveloped, where great wealth and extreme poverty sleep side by side. And the West disease of the 21st century has changed the way people live, love, forever. We are going to be doing that review. I'm thinking of a good discussion place. Maybe if I talk to her, say, Sunday evenings, we just go slowly by slowly. But let's support our sister. Great work. If you go online, Google Torment of an Angel. Torment of an Angel by Teresa Lungu. Find that book. Support our sister. Read it. And then you're going to join us in a discussion, long discussion. I want to prolong it, so we're going to have a separate forum where we can just prolong it and read and go through what she has written. So go online again on www.booksforzambia.com, www.booksforzambia.com, and buy a book from our sister who's doing amazing things in Russia, Torment of an Angel. Let me go to Miss Lucas here. She's sending a lot of good stuff here, but maybe she wants to chime in and say one or two words. Miss Lucas.
Good morning, Maroja. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Yeah, I'm just relaying questions and comments that are coming via Facebook to you, so I hope it's not too destructive. The question that I just sent is from Malama Katulwende. He was saying, why do NGOs and a few individuals think the new constitution is the answer to all their problems? He personally thinks they are misled because you can have a good constitution, a country which is poor and undeveloped. I think that was not complete, but that's what he was trying to ask. So I'm not sure if you have a comment for that.
Just repeat that. We are about to drop off here. Let me, even time is gone. I
know we are left with exactly 1 minute. So he was just asking, why do NGOs and a few individuals think the new constitution is the answer to all their problems? He was making a comment saying, remember that 47 years, the regime of UNIPA and the MMD failed to enact a good constitution. However, in less than 2 years, that has a final draft.
I'm sure our brother is listening to one of the answers our good friend Pianki gave here. Zambia is going to be 50 years of independence. With what we have right now has been seen as inadequate. I played something which Mr. Sata himself said, we don't have any protections in that. But maybe Nathan will continue as we drop to another discussion with Perspectives, which is coming up. Join us next week, another good discussion as we follow events. We are going to be on top of it. And fear is not going to be part of it. That one I can assure our listeners. Caution, yes, as Dr. Patrick has said, and Titus. Caution, yes. But fear, if this is their objective, fear ain't going to work. This is Roger here in Okotoks. Let's join Nathan as we go to Perspectives. I love the way you hold me. I love the way you hold me. I love the way you. I've had a long day. I just wanna relax. Don't have time.